everything you need to know about elections 2024 on Cape Talk. Join the conversation.
We go to the spot questions now to our panelists. Lucian Davids of the ANC is the provincial convener of the ANC Youth League. Lucian, the Minister of Basic Education, Andrew Motsekga, recently revealed in a written parliamentary reply that there are currently 31,000 teacher vacancies in South Africa. It's blamed largely on a budget that is shrinking, a budget that has shrunk under an ANC government over the last 30 years. Should the ANC take accountability for a 31,000 vacancy list for teachers in South Africa?
Well, thank you, Lester. The answer is quite simple. Of course, we need to take accountability for the fact that there is that vacancy. However, we must understand that there's this thing, you know, called austerity. And it was made mention by Gillian, the budget cut issue. Its actual term is called austerity. And because of that, the economy is shrinking.
The right? President of the ANC in this country, Cyril Ramaphosa, the Minister of Finance, whether it be Ino Godongwana or the previous minister, Tito Mboweni, has refused to mention the A word. They have not officially announced that South Africa is in a period of austerity, but quite clearly we are. Why won't the ANC acknowledge it?
Look, I don't think it's an issue mainly of not acknowledging. More so, we're looking for definite ways within expanding the economy to make sure that we can fight back against austerity, because it's not mainly a thing that is particular to South Africa, right? It is a phenomenon that takes place, you know, around the world that has market systems in place mainly.
Sanela, I want you to respond to Lucian there. That austerity, which this government has not officially recognized, is impacting on public services, particularly health, education, the future of South Africa's youth. Sonele?
I think, you know, for them to not acknowledge that, it's a sign that shows that they don't see what they are putting us through. You know, because if you're in government, if you're in control, you have to admit where you're not done enough. And we have to put measures. ANC has failed dismally to put measures to cap and give us hope that in the near future we'll take up the road up to say there's a light at the end of the tunnel. No, so I think we need a new government. The president has failed. The ministers have failed. I think for that matter, they've been on those positions for the longest time now. It's almost for three terms in as a Minister of Basic Education and all these ministers. We need change. If people can vote for another party or parties to combine and work, I think the multi-party is the future, because if one person has the arrogance of numbers, he will take decisions that are not in favor of the people.
Akolele, only 7% of adults have tertiary education qualifications in South Africa. The statistics is shocking when it comes to those who have graduated finding access into the job market. What is Rise Mzansi's plan? Wait for Akolele Notiwala. You're going to have to share with Lucian. Not saying there's a power sharing agreement here, but there's a mic sharing agreement here.
Let's see. Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Lester. So, I mean, as I said, young people have failed across the board in South Africa, whether you're a graduate, whether you're not a graduate, whether you're in school, whether you're outside of school. The ruling party in terms of higher education and the governing party even here has a responsibility in terms of basic education, because that is a shared function within the province of the Western Cape. I do want to say it is a concern hearing the IFP talking about federalism. There seems to be conversations in the multi-party charter about the scramble for South Africa. Because if you look at the DA, they want the Western Cape, the IFP wants KZN, and probably Action SA wants Gauteng, and that's a problem. We cannot continue to colonize now provinces within South Africa, and we must call that out. We are a South Africa that should be led by one government, and we should call that out.
Gillian Bosman of the Democratic Alliance, there was a report released by Youth Progressors which mentioned many factors that see Western Cape children, youth, leading better lives than the rest of the country. At 58%, the Western Cape has the lowest percentage of school-going children who depend on school nutrition. Water and sanitation plays a very, very important part of households. The Western Cape is a top performer in environmental quality, which leads to a better quality of life. But Stats SA says that a component that affects the livelihoods and the quality of life of young people is the shelter component. And the Western Cape performs relatively poorly when it comes to shelter. And that the finding by Stats SA says that this is driven by the fact that almost 19% of households in the Western Cape are classified as informal dwellings in this province. How is that affecting the quality of life of the young people that live in this province?
I think we all know that South Africa has a massive housing crisis, and I want to take it back to the point that Lucian made around austerity. It's easy to say that austerity is a global phenomenon, but austerity is also a government implemented tool to manage bad decisions that government has made. And we know that we are currently suffering directly from the decisions made during the Zuma administration, the Mbeki administration, and the Mandela administration around the types of macroeconomic policies that was put in place for South Africa. The housing crisis in the Western Cape is a crisis that mirrors itself across the country. And because of apartheid spatial planning, we are still dealing with where people live and how far they live from the opportunities. The focus in the Western Cape, and the reason why more young people in the Western Cape are better off than other young people in other provinces, is because we've continued to spend more per capita on young people than other provinces. We've continued to make sure that young people have a voice, and whether that is through our youth programs or through our Commissioner for Children in the Western
Cape.
Let
me challenge you there. A 600,000 long list in the housing backlog in the Western Cape. You've mentioned various ANC administrations nationally, but this is a province that the Democratic Alliance has been government here for the last 15 years, but still a 600,000 long waiting list for housing.
I think, Lester, maybe the first thing we have to debunk as well is to talk about what the housing waiting list is. It's not a waiting list. It's not a list of people who are queued 1 to 600,000. It's a database of people looking for housing opportunities. What we've done in the Western Cape is we've shown that we can use the grant framework that exists nationally, because the money has to come from national, and we can cut that into different programs, whether that is using the finance-linked subsidy program to provide a program where first-time home buyers can buy homes by getting support from government through perhaps helping with a bond application and paying the deposit, or whether that is rent-to-buy, a very successful pilot we've seen in the Cape Agulhas municipality, but also the current mayor of Cape Town and the MACO member for human settlements, Carl Popheim, has committed to accelerating inner-city social housing and ensuring that we get young people, older people, and communities who want to be closer to where they live and work to be.
Inam from the Economic Freedom Fighters, a question, several questions on our WhatsApp line is, what do you mean? What is decolonized education in South Africa?
Before we get to the issue of decolonized education, because I think that's widely spoken about and we don't need to get into that, but I just want to...
There are
to
many of our listeners who do not know what decolonized education is.
But I just want to go back to what Gillian is saying about these programs. I'm from Guguletu and I haven't seen these programs being enacted in our communities. And also the reality is that the economic cores are in the city center and we don't have access to that as the black and colored youth. So in 2012, the DA adopted a densification policy which speaks to densifying the city center and also diversifying the city center. So when we look at things such as apartheid spatial planning, they're still permeable in the city of Cape Town. So when you speak about a curfew, there's an unspoken curfew in the city of Cape Town. We see black and colored people coming into the city center in the mornings, and then in the afternoons they have to go out because there is no access to social housing. Since the turn of the democracy, there hasn't been a single social housing project that the DA has done in the city centers or the economic cores.
I need you to get to that question that our listeners have asked. What is your definition of decolonized education in South Africa?
It's a simple one. So decolonized education is an education system that is modeled in the context of Africa that comes with solutions by Africans for Africans, or even if we stretch it further to the global south. So essentially it's an education system that is modeled by us for us.
021-446-0567. I'll take more of your questions, your WhatsApp.
On the road to elections 2024, let's reflect on how far we've come together. Go to primemediaplus.com and ewn.co.za.
Good morning, it's Greg speaking. Speaking to the young EFF lady, education has gone private because government cannot supply a decent education to anyone anymore. It's only getting worse. So if you want to take away private education, then you're going to see this country fall even faster than taking away their ports, because there will simply be people who are illiterate everywhere and unemployable. Thanks, bye.
Could you respond to that message?
I mean, I think that even if you look at the structures of the EFF, education is something that is very important to us. If you look at the leadership of the EFF, it's quite an educated leadership. So education is something that we prioritize. Just because the ANC government has failed to provide quality education does not mean that we as the EFF would also fail to do the same thing. We prioritize education. We're saying that we must have quality education, and that starts from early childhood development programs to basic education all the way up until higher education. We're also saying that we want to provide scholarships to people in higher education, both in South Africa and abroad, because we want to have the best of the best in terms of education in the country.
Quickly to Lucian Davids of the ANC, according to the 2019 Stats SA report on internet captivity, 10% of South African homes had internet access, 16% of South African youth had access at internet cafes or educational institutions, 64% of South African youth had access to internet connectivity on their phones. What's your party's plan to ensure that there is internet access to young people, that they can remain connected in an interconnected world and a digital economy, Lucian?
Well, firstly, there has been talks around, obviously, you know, the embracing of the fourth industrial revolution in South Africa. So the ANC, you know, would be developing plans, you know, to make sure that more programs that's coming in through the development or rather the increasing of the capacity to make sure that young people, you know, are able to access these very crucial digital tools, whether it be at their libraries, whether it be at schools through their what back then would have been called the Kanya classes, making sure that, you know, students have access to the internet and computers to make sure that they are able to use the internet and apply to universities and so forth.
Akholeli, as part of Rise Mzanzi's manifesto, you also say that aspects of the curriculum should be Africa-centered. What does that mean?
So it means that you have many South Africans who do not understand the African history, because we are an African country. And we need to understand where we are from where we've come from, but also we take it further to say it's not only just that we need to get civic education in school, in primary school, in high schools, so that you have young people being able to talk about these things themselves because they've studied them, they've learned them in school. When we talk about needing new leaders, we also say that we need young people to understand the South African Constitution, to understand the Bill of Rights. It would be amazing to have a high schooler as part of this conversation, but many of them wouldn't understand these things because they are not being taught in high school.
For the record, we've approached high schools to send learners who may not even be registered to vote because they may not even qualify in terms of age, but we wanted them to be part of a process because elections aren't for the present, it's for the future. Schools have politely declined, saying they would want learners as part of national policy, not to engage in party political, but I thought it would have been important for younger people to be involved in this conversation. Gillian? Gillian from the DA, can I have his mic, please?
If I could maybe ask Akwilili, what aspects of the curriculum are not African-centered at the moment? And I'm asking purely as a former academic publisher who helped put some of those books together. What aspects of the curriculum does not include active citizenship education? Because I've worked with young people, and on Saturday I held a workshop in Makassar for young people, high school students, who are very engaged. They understand what the challenges are in their communities, and the governance structures for youth, especially in this province, and I think nationally through the Children's Parliament, show us that we've got very committed and very engaged young people who understand, I think better than most adults, what the contemporary issues are and how they want to shape their futures. In the Western Cape, through the Commissioner for Children, we regularly have those type of
engagements. Let's wrap up this question so that Akwilili could answer, and then I'll go to Sanele.
So it's the aspect where when you get to high school, you have to choose between history or other subjects. I was a mathematics student. I studied mechanical engineering post high school. I only got involved in politics and got to understand politics and got to understand South Africa and the Constitution through my own activism. Had I never been involved in the Social Justice Coalition, I would not be here today. It is those aspects where we need to understand where we come from as a country, as a continent, in terms of our basic education system.
Sanele Zondo of the IFP, I'd like you to weigh in on this. I think we have a thread here of decolonized education. Next year, we will actually mark the 10th anniversary year at UCT of the Roads Must Fall movement. I'd like you as an IFP leader to talk about what does decolonized education, Africanized centered education mean to you as a young leader?
No, it's funny. When we see leaders, it is in turn in terms of their debate, in terms of their points. You have to align your debate. First of all, you hear AFF talking about nationalization of everything. But if you go to their leaders, their dependents are studying in boarding schools. You know, if you are saying that you want to nationalize things, you must start by showing it. You walk the talk. Don't say something else when you are at work, but practice something different when you are at home. You know, you come to Rise Mzansi. I'm just laughing when my comrade here is speaking, because Rise Mzansi has been funded by Rebecca Oppenheimer, and they come here and they tell us that the education need to be some sort of Africanism or something. But at the end of the day, we are here talking about the future of this country. I made the point of federalism, and when you are telling people that they have to know their history, they have to know their background to understand where they want to take this country forward to, make sure that the regulations and policies are allowing them to do so. And that is federalism, that is the form of government that will bring us to that aspect.
I'm going to give Akwilili a time to respond. I'll give Inam a chance to respond to what was an indirect question to her.
Everything you need to know about elections 2024 on Cape Talk. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to our debate. We'll get to our invited guests who will pose questions to our party representatives in a short while, but let me get back to that inference made by Sandile Zondo of the IFP to the EFF in Nam. Sandile inferred that EFF leaders' children go to public schools, and I'll tie this into a question which I want all of our panelists to answer yes or no, and maybe you could do a short qualification. Should public representatives be compelled to send their children to public educational institutions?
Okay, so to respond, it's not the EFF government that has failed the education system. It's the ANC government. So that is why even with the EFF manifesto, we are saying that there must be one standard education system. So we are saying that there mustn't be an IEP versus a NSC situation. There must just be one standard education system. So in that instance, then we wouldn't even have to answer that question. And then just back to the roads must fall thing. So the spatial makeup and the pedagogy of this country teaches young people to undermine, if not hate, their being. Nothing in our environment or in our schools reminds one that they are African or that they are in Africa. So it couldn't be correct that the statue of a colonialist, Cecil John Rhodes, stood tall in the middle of a university in Africa in 2015. So in the main, that is what the Rhodes Must Fall generation was calling for, the fall of Rhodes in the University of Cape Town.
Akolele, should public representatives be compelled to send their children to public education institutions?
Yes, they must. And that will ensure that they make sure that those public institutions work for everyone. When we talk about bridging, particularly in the Western Cape, we talk about equality. And for us to get to equality, we must deal with equity and making sure that we fix what has been neglected for the past 15 years in this province and for the past 30 years in the country.
Lucian Davids of the ANC.
Thank you, Lester. I do agree, you know, that our public reps should, you know, send their kids to public schools. I'm actually a bit perturbed by our EFF Mafighter that's running away from the question, because, I mean, since we have this democracy, we have choice. And instead of going for public, they choose private. So, you know, you don't have to be, you know, run away from the question. I mean, you had the choice and they still chose private when they could do public, while jabbing at the ANC to say that, if it was a unitary thing, then, you know.
Before I get in to respond, Sandile, your thoughts on this question.
I think, public reps, dependent, should go to public schools. It's cheating when you're saying you are making laws for public schools, but at the same time, you are taking your child to private schools, which means you don't trust the laws and policies that you are making. You won't put feelings, you won't put emotions in the laws that you are making if you know that those laws won't work in your child.
The IFP in its manifesto also speaks to an open free market system. Free market system comes with the freedom of choice. So if you're saying that public representatives must be compelled, does that not go contradictory to a free market system that the IFP endorses?
No, the context, free market system and the freedom of choice. Take it from SGPs. The SGP school governing body complies the requirement to be the SGP. You should have a child in that school, you know, so that whatever you do, you'll know that will affect your child and the future of your child. That must be something that may be applied. You can't make laws and take it for South Africa and take your child to study abroad.
Gillian, your response for this round?
I think we need to give people the option of having better public schools so that they can choose to send their kids to those schools. In the Western Cape, we've got a wonderful tool called the Schools Evaluation Authority. So if the leader of the EFF would like to find a decent public school, you can go and look at the reports on all the public schools in the Western Cape and see how the Schools Evaluation Authority has ranked those schools, and you might find that there's quality education, not just in private schools, but in many public schools. So, Lester, the short answer is, if you want us to trust you, you have to put skin in the game. And I think that's important when it comes to public services, because if we all work towards building proper public services like education, like healthcare, it should be a no-brainer that that becomes an option for everybody.
Gillian Bosman, thanks so much. We're back after this.
On the road to elections 2024, let's reflect on how far we've come together. Go to primemediaplus.com and ewn.co.za.
What is an election? What is a debate on an election, which we're focusing on youth and education? We've asked representatives of student bodies here at UCT to be part of our panel and to ask questions to our panelists here. Student politics is party politically aligned. So here with us is the SRC president, Hlamulo Kurhumbi, who is a member of the EFF. We have the DA student organizations, Tom Wells. We have also invited SASCO, aligned to the ANC. They haven't arrived, but I ask you and I invite you, Hlamulo, not to just put on a party political hat, but as a hat as a young person in South Africa. What are your questions to our panelists here? What are your questions? What are your questions to our panelists?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for having me here. So I think my question will go to, I will be more specific on the issues which happens on campus. So I want to understand from each political party what is their take on the issue of accommodation, which all institution faces. Each and every year you see students sleeping on halls, students sleeping outside, and how are they going to resolve it? What is the practical solution which they think it will be best for them? Then I think the second question to me, it will go specifically to the representative of ANC. I was listening not so long talking about the education system, specifically on the basic education, which I want to understand, how are they thinking to resolve the issue of having two types of education, IEB and NEC, which IEB is for those who can afford, those who are rich or semi-rich, and NEC is for us who can't afford or come from a disadvantaged background. And why for over 30 years they still allow such? Because to us it reflects as if there is still a Bantu education for those who can afford and those who can't. I think those are the two questions. Thank you.
Lucian Davids, because that question was directly posed to you, the second part, I'll have you start and we'll go around the table here. Your response?
Okay, no, thank you. Hlamulo is your name. Okay, thank you for the question. Look, from our side as the ANC, we recognize that there's a lot more work that needs to be done, a lot more engagements that needs to come from communities and societies to make sure that we are moving forward together as a country in terms of, you know, still addressing the challenges that we do have. I think more so in our attempt to respond to the issue of the two educational systems that exist, I definitely still think that there's room for us, you know, to really address the matter, as that question was not brought onto the table yet. So I'm not going to answer anything that I know that I won't do justice on, but what I'm saying 100% from our side is that we as the ANC invite those engagements to make sure that we do have an inclusive and unitary educational system, so it's not exclude, because I mean this is a democracy that we fought for, and it requires us all, as you know, people of this country, to have a stake in that transformation we wish to see.
Aktualile?
Thank you. So three things. One, fixing leadership and management in terms of the Department of Higher Education. Second is that we need to improve on intergovernmental relations and cooperative governance, because a university doesn't exist on its own. It exists in a province. It exists amongst other departments. And so this is a housing issue. Therefore, you have to bring in the Department of Human Settlements to work with the Department of Higher Education. It gets us to talk about public land that's available so that we build more housing and accommodation for students in the province and across South Africa.
Inam from the EFF.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, the accommodation question is directly linked to the land question and also landlessness, displacement, and dispossession. So when we say that we need the land and also we need to have state capacity, it's for that reason, so that we can provide accommodation through state-owned buildings and parcels of land. So as we are saying, as the EFF, basically we would be able to provide accommodation to students through our state-owned buildings. And also, this will also prevent the monopoly of private accommodation that you find in and around institutions of higher learning.
Mm. Gillian Bosman of the Democratic Alliance.
Lester, the first thing we have to address is we have to address the lack of transparency in the student housing infrastructure program and how that funding model works. We need to address the inconsistent data that we have on student accommodation and what is available at universities and what is available in the private sector, because we know the private sector is capitalizing on the issues that young people are having. We also need to address some of those allegations of price collusion within how student accommodation subsidies are provided to private sector developers. And then also maybe one of the most important things is we need the national government to look at a market-related setting, because the blanket accommodation fee cap on student accommodation is part of the problem, because what something costs close to UCT versus what it costs in Bellville at CPUT and what it costs in Stellenbosch is very different.
Sanele Zondia, the IFP.
No, thanks. I think first and for all, the public-private partnership need to be fostered so that we will bridge the gap between the private and public institutions. You know, as the IFP believe that whenever you want to bridge that gap, you need to cooperate and work together and to transform that. For the student accommodation, I think we've been talking about this thing for the longest time in the portfolio, to say you can't have a blanket approach, because there are cases whereby you find that the state of the student accommodation does not tell with the cap that the department has put in place. So what must be done? Firstly, we must adhere to the requirement of the student accommodation from the private owners. That first thing. Second thing, the corruption, you know, the ruling party is rotten. That is the fact that we cannot shy away. We have private accommodations which are costing into a maximum cap, because the admin or management has a say or are getting some monies from those owners of that private accommodation. So I think the fact of a ruling party need to be rooted out, because the corruption comes with them. Then we'll have a proper structures that are proper managed and doing justice to our students.
Let's take another question from the floor. Tom Valls, you represent the DAS, or the DA Students Organization. What is your question for all our panelists?
Thanks, Lester. I actually have a question for the ANC representative, Lucien, and it relates to NSFAS. If you were to walk just 100 meters away from where we are now to the SRC offices, it's very likely that you'll find a handful of students there waiting to speak to SRC members, because their NSFAS funding got cut suddenly. They're still waiting for a response. They're facing financial exclusion, not based on academic performance, but purely because of maladministration, lack of funding. And that's made a lot worse by the 10% budget cut to NSFAS this year, which resulted in 87,000 eligible students losing funding. And like Lester mentioned earlier, just one of many budget cuts to basic education, healthcare, policing. And if we're going to get to the core of why these budgets are being cut, it's to fund a bloated public sector, overstaffed SOEs and an overstaffed public sector. So if you were to walk with me after this debate in your ANC t-shirt to speak to those students, how would you justify that to them? How would you justify stripping their right to tertiary education or their access to a tertiary education to fund a bloated public sector. Thanks.
Lucian Davids of the ANC.
Thank you, Mr. Wells. Look, the way that the question is structured seems as if we are deliberately not wanting to fund students. You'd understand that since we inherited the democracy, we have been challenged with the mod of economic backlogs, especially because of the issue that during the apartheid phase in the 1980s, this government, the apartheid government, went into a spree of privatizations and taking debts from world institutions. Hence, you'd find that during the term or the tenure of President Thabo Mbeki, we had to change policy in order to expand the economy, which is now the issue of us resulting with having to go on to what is called this program of austerity to make sure that we are paying off that budget deficit at least, or making sure that we are trying to take care of the economy in that way. Hence, you find that there's these budget cuts because we're trying to make sure that we are managing the health of the economy, because all of the programs that we're trying to fund, and you'd understand that the ANC has institutionalized a lot of social programs within this country, and unfortunately it is a big burden towards the citizens within this country. And from my side, my advice, or my word of speaking, would obviously be like, see, we are students at this institution, many of us are struggling, but for ourselves, is we need to have that dialogue, that inclusive that dialogue from all sectors of the society to make sure that we get an appropriate type of a way of addressing the issue of student challenges.
I'm going to bring into this conversation Daniel Den Hollander, is a clinical psychologist, is an executive council member of Psychology South Africa, recently writing an opinion piece called Listen to the Voices of the Youth. We don't want your corruption and your divisions. We want our Ubuntu back. If you can sum up your piece, but also direct it as a question to our panel here, Daniel, what's your thoughts on the state of the youth and education in South Africa?
So I recently graduated to not being a youth a week ago or a month ago when I turned 40. But my position is I am a clinical psychologist who works in the Athlone area and serve with youth in Lansdowne, Bontheville, Hanover Park, Newfield. And as we're sitting here as five people, if I can include myself, six, and Lester, seven, we're also sitting here as elders. And elders have a very important responsibility within the African community. And I'm thinking, as we're sitting here, have we done what we are supposed to do? Have we done what comes back to our roots, especially the five of you who represent the most influential people, the most influential personnel to help this generation? Let me tell you something about this generation. We are so fortunate to have such a brilliant generation coming through, who are able to change the things that Biko and Sobukwe, we want to talk about decolonization. We not once mentioned Sobukwe and Biko, the fathers of our decolonization. And we don't hear it at all. And I want to say something, because I don't see the elders of our country fulfilling the mandate that Biko and Sobukwe have asked us in 70s. We have become the children of Biko. We have realized that the only vehicle for change is ourselves. Through social media, we are coming to ourselves. Through the Women's March, Rose Must Fall, we have pumped back energy into our empty shells through education and learnerships. This is our demand to you.
Daniel, can I ask you,
this is a spiritual revolution.
Your question, we're running out of time. What would be your question to leave our panelists with?
We want our Ubuntu back, and you are busy dividing us. How? How are you, as five representatives, going to give us our Ubuntu back?
Let's start with Akolile, and we'll go around this way. Akolile, Inam, Lucian, Gillian, and then Sanele. After this elections, after the 29th of May, you're all young leaders in this country running for representative membership of our legislatures and our National Assembly. How do we unite the South African youth after this election?
Thank you, Lester. So that's why it was important for us to talk about bringing an African lens into our education system, in terms of our basic education system, so that we can understand, young people can understand what it means to be Ubuntu. But again, yesterday I launched the Western Cape Plan, and it's called the Bridge Plan. Because there are divides in the Western Cape. There are racial divides, there are class divides, there are spatial divides, and we need to deal with those. Without having us to deal with those, we're not going to go to Ubuntu.
Inam?
So everything about the EFF is about restoring the dignity of our people. So the issue of the land question remains at the core of what we speak about and our principles, because when you have land and means of production, you're able to create jobs, you're able to produce shelter, and you're also able to develop the country's infrastructure for the betterment of our people and the country's economy. So everything that the EFF stands for is actually for the betterment of our people, and we're not far from what Sobukwe speaks about and also Biko speaks about.
Running it's out embedded of time, in Lucian? You have 30 seconds, unfortunately. 30 seconds.
Thanks, Lester. You know, the ANC has always been inclusive, democratic, non-sexist, non-racial. And we will always live to, you know, hold close those aspirations. The ANC Youth League has also been helping the ANC reach more sectors, you know, in terms of doing church visits, having walkabouts and blitzings, you know, making sure we reach the people and reconnect with them, because the message has always been that we are one people, we are African.
Gillian Bosman, as quickly as possible.
Lester, what we want to do as the Democratic Alliance is to strengthen communities, develop communities through collaboration with government, the private sector and civil society to enable community wellness, creating a safer environment, ensuring that jobs are created in our communities. Because we know nothing stops a bullet like a job. That's how we improve South Africa.
Final word from the IFP, Zanele Zondi.
I think we need to come to reality to say that when you go to KwaZulu-Natal, you'll find that people there, they have land under the Ngoyama Trust Act, you know. And the fact of the matter in that is that Prince Telezi transferred the land from the state land in 1994 to Ngoyama Trust Board, you know. So the fact is that the government should start by transferring the state land to the people before we're talking about the AFF and the land.
That's all we have time for, Zanele Zondi. Really appreciate your time. That's our show.